All right. Good morning, everybody. Monday morning, November 29th. We're going to mostly take a break from lab this morning and meet up in lecture, but we got a question regarding hard and soft ionization techniques for mass spec and the differences between those. And so I'm going to deal with that real quick. If I can get into my iPad. Okay, let me share the screen. So the two that we, there are others, but the two that we discussed were electron impact. And electrospray ionization. So in electron impact, what we do is we take the molecule and the molecule is fired through a chamber that essentially has an electro gun and a positive and negative field in it, in which the electrons are traveling through. And as this thing gets hit, electrons get knocked off of it to become a molecular ion. And that molecular ion, we call this sort of a hard technique. And that hard technique, this thing then fragments into many different fragmentations. As free radicals are inherently unstable. The other technique, the electrospray technique, takes a molecular or a molecule, and in this case, what it does is it passes it through a chamber where an acid or a base is sprayed. And so generally what we have is we have some sort of spray here, where what we do is we inject something like acetic acid. And that acetic acid is a source of protons. And so what we wind up getting is we wind up getting a protonated molecular ion.
This is all happening in a vacuum, is it?
Not. It might be reduced pressure. I don't think it's a strong vacuum. It could be.
So we can assume hydrogen can, protons can move about and like connect to different things.
Well, it's not happening in solution. It's happening in a gaseous form. So these guys are injected and sprayed, and so they're and heated, and so they are in a gaseous form, both for the electron impact and for the electrospray ionization. Mm-hmm. And so the it's not as if it's in condensed phase that this is happening. But what you're seeing is you're seeing reactions that are happening in the gas phase where you're getting acid-base reactions in the gas phase. So most of the molecules in this case, these molecules, the things that work well are ethers, carbonyl compounds, those types of things that have oxygens with lone pairs, nitrogens, these types of molecules work really well for electrospray ionization. And so particularly, we like to do this with amino acids, with proteins. It works very well for protein type structures.
I just had like in one of the problems, it was kind of like, okay, I have this ring, but the other things fell off and now there's this extra hydrogen that wasn't there before. Is that a reasonable assumption that I could get there?
Wait, ask the question.
Well, I just had like, I had a fragment that kind of picked up an extra hydrogen after fragmentation. And I kind of thought that that'd be really weird because I had a fragment spike on the spectrum.
Okay.
And so I was kind of like, that's reasonable. That can happen, I suppose. The hydrogens are everywhere.
Yes. But that happens in a different way. So this then, this is what we call, let me finish this and then I'll give you a little bit better idea how that happens. So this is what we call a soft technique. And the reason that we call it a soft technique is because this gets few fragmentations. This doesn't tend to fragment as much as the protonated molecular ion is more stable than a free radical. So we're also more likely to see the molecular ion in this. However, when you have molecules that have multiple oxygens and nitrogens, it is possible to get not only plus one, but also molecular ion plus two and molecular ion plus three, that we can get multiple molecular ions here. And the problem with that is the charge to mass ratio. So that where you get an MZ ratio here, so your MZ ratio is going to be mass divided by one. This is going to be mass divided by two. This is going to be mass divided by three. And so what you wind up getting is get not only the molecular ion peak, but sometimes we see other molecular ions that arise from multiple protonations, which can be problematic in terms of looking at this. So what you're discussing, or what Retta, what you are looking at is a spectrum for a molecule that may show a fragmentation. We may get the molecular ion peak out here that was the free radical. You have its little C13 spike that's there. And then you have some sort of fragmentation here, which is a fragment plus a proton. And so where did that proton come from? The question mark is, how did that guy get there? And sometimes that happens through a mechanism similar to McLafferty. So if you remember McLafferty, where I can pick up the proton from the McLafferty exchange, and then this piece gets eliminated over there. This is similar to plus a proton. So I've picked up that proton in a chemical reaction that has occurred, similar to McLafferty. Alcohols will do this as well. There are other molecules that will do this. And oftentimes it's some sort of cyclic process where it abstracts a proton from someplace else in the molecule. And so that's how we can get these fragmentations that are plus proton. And they can occur for many different functional groups. But anytime you have an oxygen or a nitrogen in the molecule in some way, or an ether, they can oftentimes pick up a proton in their fragment, and you go, well, where did that proton come from? Sometimes it's intramolecular, sometimes it's intermolecular in terms of the process that's going through the spectrophotometer.
So it's picking it up before it fragments or something. It doesn't pick it up from the ether, like?
No, not generally. Generally, it's picking it up in the fragmentation process.
Cool, I guess I'm done. Thanks.
Yeah. So that's what's going on there. So the important part to remember, though, is that for all the things that we're doing in the class, we're doing electron impact. And all of the practice problems that I've directed you towards are electron impact. None of them are electrospray ionization. And it's just that electrospray ionization is treated a little bit differently when looking at it and trying to understand it, because you have to assume or you have to understand that your molecular ion is not a free radical, but it is also plus one because it's got the proton there that's on it. And so you have to take one away in order to figure out what your molecular mass actually is for your molecular ion peak. And then there's this little bit of trying to understand additional charges that can happen in the molecule. So like I said, these are typically used for proteins. That's what I was trying to get to. These are typically used for proteins because they don't fragment as much. And so they can be used on very, very large molecules. And in fact, up at UCSC, when we run the access program and we run the mini research program over the winter break, which I need to talk to you guys about as well, this is one of the projects that we typically do, which is a mass spec project, but we do it with electrospray ionization and working backwards to figure out what a configuration of different tripeptides are. And so we give you mass specs of different tripeptides and have you figure out what those tripeptides are. I think we've got three or four problems that we put together, and we give different ones to different groups so that they're all not working on the same project. And so there's some opportunity to go through and do that. I said that I got to talk to you guys about that. I have not been doing the best job that I should be doing in terms of other opportunities, outside opportunities for you guys. At UCSC, we typically run the access program. You guys are usually aware of that in terms of the peer tutoring. Now, we haven't had a tutor for SI. It's getting more difficult with COVID to try to find SI tutors for the classes. People are not willing to do SI anymore or willing to be SI leaders as much. And so it's been a struggle to try to identify good SI leaders. But the access program is still going on, and we are still having the Summer Research Institute at UCSC, and they're still having the mini research camp that goes over the winter break. I had an email. I'll have to look back. I'll find that email and talk about that a little bit more in class this afternoon or when we get to 11:15 at lecture. That I think they're still taking applications for that mini research camp. It's a 2-day commitment. It has one day where you do a biological project and one day where you do a chemistry project. And as I said, the chemistry project is a mass spec project, which is kind of nice to walk into at this point, since you've already had mass spec, to be able to go in and to actually, they take you into the facility, they show you the mass spec, they show you how it operates. It's a it's an MSMS, as I talked about before. So they're actually able to take fragments, trap them in an ion trap, and then release that fragment to look at the fragmentation from just that fragment component, look at the daughter fragments. And so they actually go through the problem with you then of figuring out what the tripeptide is that you were given. And the biology project, I'm trying to remember what we've typically done in the past with the biology projects. is to work on myxobacteria, bacteria from soil, and they isolate, not bacteria.
Bacteriophages?
Yeah, it's bacteriophages, exactly. And the bacteriophages are viruses, and so you're isolating viruses and they're looking for novel viruses. And so there's the chance that if your sample, the sample that you're working with happens to have any novel bacteriophages, viruses in it, then they often send those out for a DNA analysis in order to find out if it is a novel virus or not. And there's
some- I get to name it, yes?
I don't know if you get to name it or not. I don't know how that's working with the Access Program, but there's some cool things there in both of those projects that are fun to get to do.
Yeah, I did the Access mini research camp in 2020 before the pandemic, and it was a lot of fun. And I think if I had known about all about mass spec, like how we do now, it probably would have gotten more out of it.
Yeah.
Because I was very confused, but they have really good instructors there to help walk you through it. And I was able to understand for the most part, and also gave me context for this class too.
Nice. So Chloe, when you did that, did you have Chem 1B already?
Or no, I was straight out of Chem 1A.
Yeah. And so what we typically do is we try to seed each one of the groups with a few OChem students who have a little bit of mass spec experience to try to help guide the rest of the students that are out of Chem 1A and out of Chem 1B who have no idea what mass spec is. But yeah, the mass spec can definitely be a challenging component if you've only had Chem 1A and Chem 1B. But it's a good program. And like you said, they have good instructors. We generally try to find liaisons from the different colleges that are really good at working with the students and taking them through these different techniques and showing them how they work. So I'm glad you got to do that, Chloe. I'm glad that was a good experience for you. So is that something that you would recommend to others to apply to as well?
Oh yeah, 100%. Plus, since we've been out of the lab for so long, like I'm pretty sure they might be doing in-person lab at the mini research camp. So that's something to think about. You get to work with pipettes and you get to see a mass spectrometer in person and like meet some of the UCSD professors. And they talk a lot about like grad school, giving advice. It's a all around pretty good experience, and they pay for your travel expenses and all that. So
that's right.
The application deadline is like December. I don't even know where it is, but it's pretty easy.
I'll look it up and I'll see where it is. But yeah, it's a fairly small application. The only thing about it is that you have to have not transferred to a four-year university or have ever been enrolled in a four-year university. So it's really for transfer students. You can already have been accepted at UCSD for transfer, but have not completed that transfer yet. In other words, you're still at Cabrillo. But if you have any four-year experience and you're coming back and retooling and trying to go back and get a second degree or even if you had not completed your first degree and came back to community college and you're planning on going back to the four-year university, anybody who started out at a four-year university is ineligible for the Access Program. So it really is just for our transfer students. As much as that is may not make sense, it is a restriction that is imposed on us from the National Institutes of Health, from the NIH, which is the granting institution for the grant. So it's really not coming from us in the Access Program and from UCSD. It's really the federal government who's putting those limitations on us in the granting institution where that comes from. Okay. All right, any other questions you guys want to hit before I let you go and I go work on videos furiously, getting things up online?
So when you say let us go, you mean to go look at the videos that are already done? Or
I have one that I can get up online. The other one I've got to convert into an MP4 so that it's small enough. Right now it's in the gigabyte file range, and that's going to take me about 30 minutes to convert it. Just to convert the, I think it's like, I don't know, 6 or 7 gigabytes, and I got to get it down into the megabyte range to convert it down. So I'm going to give you guys those, I'm going to get those links up online later today, but they're not going to be ready for this morning. Okay. But I'm just going to keep working on stuff and try to keep, move things forward for you guys. So we're just going to take a break from lab this morning, and then I'm going to meet you at 11:15, and we'll talk about lecture. And we'll do some more on aromaticity and the reactions of aromatic compounds. We'll look at electrophilic aromatic substitution. All right.
Okay, thanks.
And thank you. Bye.
All right, bye.